Hello, Alif.
Hello, David. How are you?
I'm good, and you?
I'm good. So, you're still back there. When are you returning? Welcome to another installment of our podcast series for our Nordic EdTech Network project. I'm Alif Tronson, and I'm very pleased to be interviewing David Nguyen, CEO and founder of PeerGrade, a company with headquartered in Copenhagen. I met David face-to-face for the first time last week when we had coffee at Stanford University. Shortly after, he and his team had found an apartment in San Francisco, getting ready for their big adventure and program at Y Combinator in Mountain View here in Silicon Valley. Y Combinator is notoriously difficult to get into, apparently much harder to get into than Stanford University, where we had coffee, because it is probably the most well-known, highly ranked U.S. accelerator, and PeerGrade is the first Nordic EdTech company that I know of that has been accepted into Y Combinator. So congratulations, David, and welcome to our podcast series.
Thanks a lot.
So why don't you start off, David, and giving us a little bit of background of yourself and perhaps a little bit about the core team as well, and then about how PeerGrade got started.
Sure. So, yeah, my name is David, and my background is fairly technical. I'm a mathematician, and after my math degree got over, then I started working as a PhD student within machine learning in a university in Copenhagen. And that was also what led to PeerGrade. So I've been teaching some courses as a PhD student, and one of those courses was 20 students, and everybody was happy. And then I changed the title of the course, so it had big data in it. And everybody loves the big data. So my 20 students suddenly became 150. And a lot of things become very difficult when you almost do 10x as many students. And one of those things is giving feedback to your students, and it's grading all those papers that they hand in. So the idea was that instead of me having to grade all those papers, what if the students could do it for each other? So the students would hand in some work, and then instead of me giving them feedback, they would each give feedback to three other papers anonymously. And the smart thing about this is not just that I can save some time, but also that when you have to read other people's work and you have to reflect about whether it's good or not, and you have to write constructive feedback, you actually learn a lot. So the students learn more, and I have less boring work on my shoulders. So that's kind of a eureka moment when you think about it. So that's where we started. We started with just my course. And then after we launched the first version of the product, I found some great co-founders. I found my old high school friend, Malte, who's much better at programming than I am. And I found Simon, who's a designer from Copenhagen as well, who could make PeerGrade look like something that a mathematician hasn't built. So now PeerGrade is both scalable and pretty to look at. And that's kind of where PeerGrade started. Beyond Malte and Simon, who are the co-founders together with me, we also have a group of five other people to help with development and marketing and other things.
Okay. David, it sounds like Skype is not having a good day here.
Okay.
You're coming in and out a bit. So let's see if this gets worse or continues. We might need to have to reschedule. I don't know if it's at your end or my end.
Yeah, I don't know. It sounds very good from here. Just so you know, I'm also doing a recording, so maybe we can stitch it together.
Okay. All right, let's continue then and see how it goes. So can you share a little, maybe a few highlights of your entrepreneurial journey so far, including some of the, you know, typically lows and highs that come with being an entrepreneur and, in your case, being an edupreneur? And then what are some of the lessons learned that you have gained during the journey so far and that perhaps can be of value to your fellow Nordic edupreneurs who are listening to this podcast?
Sure. So to start with the high, starting with the good stuff, I think one of the most rewarding experiences for us building PeerGrade is when we see people actually using PeerGrade in their classroom. So we see teachers writing happy messages to us on our intercom chat, or when we see teachers posting pictures of smiling kids on Twitter. That is basically what keeps us going every day, right? It's always nice to sign a large contract, but there's nothing better than coming in the morning and seeing happy people use your product. You also asked me to show some of the lows or talk about some of the lows that comes with running a startup, and I think that's very important, right? Startups are not this glorified thing where you're just running around every day and just growing and growing and growing. There's a lot of challenges, and one of the core challenges that many people face, I think, and that we also face, was that I think we started scaling our team a little bit too early. Today we are a number of fewer people than we started with, and if you grow too fast, you quickly realize it, and then you have to lay off people, and firing or laying off people is probably the worst thing I've ever had to do in peer grade, and I really want to avoid that situation again in the future. So I think it's often very easy to get into this hiring spree where you say like, oh, we should hire some more people, we should grow fast, that's what all the investors are saying. But I think it's very important to be a little bit slow at hiring, to be honest. In terms of... you have what you say.
I think that's really good advice, because going too fast and... You know, I think that's probably maybe a more common problem here in Silicon Valley, where particularly when you get venture funding, that you're pushed to go fast and hire people and so on. In the Nordics, maybe we often, you know, take things a little slower, and so I think that's really a good idea.
I also think it's dangerous, right? Because whenever you talk to at least non-startup people, and they say, "What do you do?" and you say, "Blah blah, I do this startup," they say, "How many people are you?" It's a very normal way to measure success in many people's minds. And once you realize that actually you can run much faster with fewer people, then you get a different perspective on that, basically. In terms of kind of the edtech world, right, because we are I'm an entrepreneur, as you say. It's a new word for me, kind of. But one of the things we learned is that a lot of people talk about a lot of buzzwords in general. And also in the education space, right? You wouldn't find many startups today that don't have some kind of machine learning in their pitch decks. And especially in education, that comes down to adaptive learning and these kind of technologies. And being a machine learning researcher myself, it becomes very easy to see through all this bullshit. And I think it's very important that we don't just throw a bunch of statistical tools at a high school class and then expect them to learn a lot more. It's not that simple. And I think because people have this tendency to pick their tool first and then attack a problem with the tool, they seem to be ending up in some situations that are not very interesting for learning. For example, another adaptive math quiz. There's 100 adaptive math programs, and maybe that's not the only problem we should be solving.
Yeah. I have to alert the listeners that we still have some of those problems. You, at least from my end, you seem to disappear a little bit now and then, David. But
I think it'll be okay because it's totally clear on my end. So I have a recording of this that I can share with you.
Oh, good. If you could do that, because on my end, you disappear every now and then for some reason. But Okay. Anyway, let's keep going then. Now, as I noted in my opening remarks, you and your team are now here in Silicon Valley to participate in the upcoming 3-month acceleration program at Y Combinator. So how did you swing this, and what was the process like, and what kind of advice could you give to other Nordic entrepreneurs, you know, who no doubt are anxious to follow in your footsteps and to get into Y Combinator?
Yeah, I talked to some people today about this, actually, and I think there's two stories to tell, right? One of them is how do you write maybe three steps. First of all, is how do you make a business that will actually get into Y Combinator in the end? The next step is then how do you pitch it in the written application, and finally, how do you then pass the oral interview? And, of course, the most important thing here is building the business, right? But it also has to be a business that's interesting for Y Combinator to invest in. For our sake, I think it came down to three things. I think we have a very strong team that's worked together for a long time. There's no founder problems. There's a good culture. And we're all very technical. I think Y Combinator tends to like technical teams. The other thing is that we have a product that people really like. We have a lot of users who are writing to us how much they love the product. And that's one of Y Combinator's mantras, is build something that people want, right? And we've kind of proven that people want our product. And the third thing is that we have some proof of business. We have sold licenses to PeerGrade. So we have shown that we don't have a scalable revenue model yet, but we've shown that it is possible to sell this and people are actually willing to pay for it. And that's basically what we want to pitch in the written application. And then in terms of the interview, we did a lot of mock interviews with investors or with previous Y Combinator founders. And the funny thing is, we got accepted to Y Combinator a month ago, and already I've already done two mock interviews with other people who are applying to Y Combinator. So you very fast you go from being an applicant to being an advisor on these mock interviews. And my final advice is, if you have any questions about it, just write me, find my email on PeerGrade's website and send me an email. I'll happily help with applications or mock interviews or anything.
Yeah, you're going to have a long line outside your office, David. And I'm sure this might come up at the conference next week in Kristiansand, Norway, where we're going to have a number of Nordic edupreneurs, including some from Denmark. So I will tell them about this interview so they can listen to this as well. So yes. Now, you probably don't know too much about what the Y Combinator experience will be like, although I suspect that you have some expectations, but or some knowledge about it. But what are your expectations, both about the program and what do you hope the end result of this will be once demo day is over and you look at the next phase of your edupreneuring journey that will start in 3-4 months from now?
Yeah, it's a good question, and I think we're still a little bit unsure what we should expect to be the result of Y Combinator. What we know so far is that the network you get out of becoming a Y Combinator company is very, very valuable. A lot of companies have gone through Y Combinator so far, and a lot of them are very successful today. And there is this general idea in YC that we help each other a lot. I can see that very clearly now, that every time I need an introduction or anything, I can get it very quickly. So that's already a huge value add. One of our challenges is that the Y Combinator batch we're going through is during the summer, June, July, and August. And our users are teachers, and teachers tend to have a vacation during June, July, and August. So how exactly we're going to deal with all of our users being on vacation during the 3 months where we should be growing the most, that's going to be interesting. But the other thing is that at the end of YC, there is the demo day, and the demo day is created to help startups get investments in an efficient way. So our plan is to raise a seed round going out of Y Combinator.
Good. When we talked at Stanford, you shared a bit about how the Nordic edtech markets are both similar and different. So what are some of your observations that you can share from operating in these markets? And what are some of the pros and cons about today's Nordic edtech markets from a perspective of a small edtech company, including what we talked a little bit about was public procurement policies?
Yeah. So one of the challenges when you're selling to any type of public institution, especially, I don't know a lot about every country in the world, but I know a lot about the Scandinavian countries. And over here, one of the things you run into very fast is these procurement and tender processes, where if they have to purchase something over a specific price, then it has to go into public tender. And that's very time-consuming and cost-consuming for a small startup to participate in these big tenders. And the limitations on how big the contracts can be before they end up in public tenders are different from the Nordic countries. It seems like Denmark is the most lax. It can be fairly large deals, and Norway is very strict, so very quickly almost anything will go into public tender. And I think for many startups that I've talked to, it's actually become a strategy to price the product in a way so you avoid this. Like, so price it low enough so you can go around the tenders, which might seem a little bit annoying because you have to lower your price, but if the likelihood of getting the deal becomes much, much higher and much easier, then it's probably a good idea. Another thing about the Scandinavian or Nordic countries is that they're very modern pedagogically. Often you'll find that teachers are just doing what they usually do, but it seems like if you look at the Nordic countries, it's a little bit easier to convince a teacher to try a new thing sometimes. Also, of course, there's a lot of resources. When you are setting to American schools, a lot of the kids don't have computers. They don't even have homes, some of them, right? They don't have food. It's a different world. So in Scandinavia, it's very easy. When everybody has a computer and everybody has an internet connection at home and these things, it makes educational technology a lot easier.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. The American market is so huge. And that's why there's great variation from schools district to school district. Some school districts like New York and Los Angeles, for instance, are absolutely huge, and thousands of schools, and then huge differences in socioeconomic conditions within the school districts and even the school. So that's why you really have to be very deliberate and study the market before you come in. You can lose your shirt very quickly in this large American market. So that's absolutely something that you have to think about. Now, beyond simplifying and coordinating government procurement policies for digital education products and services, what are there some other policy recommendations that you would give to especially the Nordic councils of ministers, which right now is examining what they could do to make Nordics a global leader in digital transformation and specifically in digital education and learning?
Yeah, that's a hard question. I think my answer to this is a little bit paradoxical, right? So some of the largest challenges we face when we are trying to sell peer grade to institutions is, first of all, these procurement processes that we talked about. And the other thing is different data governance rules, right? So there's a lot of data protection laws today. And like, on one side, I'm a huge fan of protecting data. We don't need kids' private names and emails all over the internet, and we don't want to have any kind of procurement is also there for a reason. But some of these things like data governance and procurement rules kind of has the effect that it has the biggest benefit for the biggest companies, the companies that have money for lawyers and money for going through these tenders. And it becomes very hard for a small company to get in because every institution expects you to have all sorts of data agreements and all sorts of resources for running tender processes. So I don't have a really good answer to this, but I think to make the Nordics a better place for like educational transformation, I think it's important that we have the startups in there as well, because they are the ones really innovating. And to make startups thrive, you need them to be able to make some money, and that means the ecosystem for selling has to be sustainable.
Yeah. Somewhat related to this is the Nordic angle. You know that we've been leading this project, the Nordic EdTech Network, and you know Janne Jeppesen. In fact, she'll be at the conference next week, and she leads Swedish EdTech Industry, which is the first and only EdTech Industry Association, I think, that we have in the Nordics. And she's a bundle of energy and doing great work in Sweden. And now I hope that she can succeed in getting greater Nordic coordination and collaboration, which, of course, we have been trying to do in the Nordic EdTech Network project, which ends, by the way, at the end of next month. So at the end of this, you know, since this is the end of the podcast interview, maybe you can share with us a few perspectives you have on how we can make the Nordics a leading developer and user of digital education and learning tools and technologies at all levels of formal education, but also in learning more generally, including lifelong learning.
Yeah. So there's two questions here, right? One is, how do you make Nordics the developers, and how do you make the Nordics the users, right? And if we start with the users, I think, as I said before, Nordic teachers are pedagogical thought leaders in many ways. A lot of people look, for example, to Finland because of their great PISA scores for advice on how to run a good education system. And to make the users, make the Nordic teachers users of EdTech products, it should be easy to access the Nordic market, right? So it should be easy for an American company to actually go and sell to a Danish school. And today they don't, right? So if you talk to American EdTech companies, they just sell to America. And of course, the Nordic countries are never going to be the biggest market, right? We're just a small group of countries over here, and America is so big. So why should you access the Nordic countries? And the reason is, if it's easy. Like, if it's easy to access, if it's the teachers are very happy to try new things, if it's easy to sell to the schools and these kind of things, then there is a chance that the Nordic markets would be an attractive market to aim for, even if you're from the U.S. But I think this is a big challenge for many reasons. And hopefully another reason that could make it possible is that luckily the Nordic people are very good at English, and translating everything is complicated, and you're probably not going to translate it to Danish, first of all. So I think it's an important help for us that we can actually speak English over here. So that should be one good thing. In terms of making the Nordics the developers, I think there's many things we can do. First of all, of course, make it easy to get funding. And I think here is a place where the European startup scene is very nice, in the sense that a lot of European startups use public grants from the governments of the Nordic countries, especially. And that's a very effective way for startups to get some cash from the beginning without having to give away equity. And then we also need to build an actual investment scene in the Nordics that's good enough.
Yeah, I think those are good points, David, and I think most of these are, or many of these, we will be discussing next week in Kristiansand, and we have a number of people that represent the ecosystems, the Nordic EdTech ecosystems in Finland, Sweden, and Denmark, and Norway, so, and hopefully many of these can also listen to your comments in this podcast. And
yeah, I'm very sorry I can't be in Kristiansand next week, but I have this thing I have to go and do in the U.S., as you know. So
we know you can't be in two places at the same time.
Not yet.
We haven't solved that problem yet.
But if somebody can solve that, I'll be very happy. I'll happily purchase some licenses.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, David, I look forward to talking to you again once you get back to Silicon Valley and I get back from the conference, and we can revisit some of these topics that we'll be discussing in Kristiansand. So
Sounds good. Thanks very
much for participating in the podcast, and
thanks for having
have me. A safe trip back over here.
Thanks a lot.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.